At KPMG, our people make the difference. It's not just something we say, it's what we do. Combining the power of people and technology, we uncover brighter insights, innovate bolder solutions, and create better data-driven outcomes. KPMG, make the difference.
Tonight on The Readout.
And remember this. Remember this. Joe Biden is a great threat to our democracy. He's a tremendous threat to our democracy.
Trump over the weekend doing his best George Orwell, trying to turn the tables on his own autocratic plans by claiming Joe Biden is a threat to democracy. Meanwhile, the self-professed billionaire apparently doesn't have enough cash to secure a bond in his civil fraud case. Also tonight, the family of a liberal icon was furious that an award given in her name is being handed to the likes of Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch. And tonight there is an update on this story. Plus, Nicole Hannah-Jones at the table tonight on how the right has hijacked the term colorblindedness, not to advance racial progress, but rather to reverse it. But we begin tonight with a sad and terrifying reality that we face in America, namely that a madman is running for president. And too many people are pretending that that is not the case. Americans seem to be numb to the ramblings of a man who quotes Adolf Hitler approvingly, vows to terminate the Constitution and open migrant internment camps on U.S. soil, and who is promising to throw the doors open to the D.C. federal prison and release thousands of violent criminals who ransacked our Capitol, smeared feces on the walls, and violently assaulted police officers on January 6, 2021. Donald Trump opened his Ohio campaign rally this weekend with Republican Senate hopeful Bernie Moreno, who may or may not have a profile on an adult website meant for casual sexual encounters, with this new creepily fascist version of the national anthem.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
Oh, but please don't do the Black National Anthem, or God forbid, kneel, or the MAGAs might actually go nuts. But Trump did more than just salute these criminals by perverting the national anthem. That was not all that he did. He also promised those pardons for these lawfully incarcerated insurrectionists.
You see the spirit from the hostages, and that's what they are, as hostages. They've been treated terribly and very unfairly, and you know that, and everybody knows that. And we're going to be working on that sooner. The first day we get into office, we're going to save our country, and we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots, and they were unbelievable patriots and are.
Then came this little word salad.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. If this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country.
Which led to a weekend of useless speculation about whether he actually meant real blood, which is kind of beside the point at this point, since he is actually being prosecuted at the state level and at the federal level for fomenting an actual insurrection that caused a lot of blood, that actually caused the deaths of at least five people. There was at least one person who testified, a police officer, that she was literally slipping in pools of blood on January 6th. So the question of whether he meant actual blood seems a bit beside the point at this point. But what's much more important is what this maniac is actually vowing to do if elected again.
On day one, my administration will terminate every open border policy of the Biden administration. We begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history, larger than that by far of Dwight Eisenhower. You know, Eisenhower had a similar problem, but peanuts by comparison.
What he isn't telling you is that Eisenhower's plan was actually labeled with the iconically racist term Operation Wetback. It actually led to a lot of human rights abuses and actual deaths. And that is what Trump is promising us in 2025, a mass roundup targeting anyone who looks like an undocumented migrant. And Trump's minions like Stephen Miller are gleefully bragging that Trump will unleash the U.S. military in blue cities like Philadelphia, New York, and Chicago. Or maybe he'll get creative and use the Insurrection Act to deputize his gang affiliates and the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, the Boogaloo Boys, and the Three Percenters. Stand back and stand by, am I right? I mean, who better to spot suspicious-looking brown people? So, if you are or look Hispanic, heads up, even if you are actually a citizen and even Latin MAGA. Enrique Tarrio, if I were you, I'd be doubly careful so you don't wind up back where you started and then also deported. Trump is also threatening to round up and deport anyone who has participated in protests against Israel's siege of Gaza, which is something to note. And this madman, whose brain is clearly addled, and little more than a ball of smooth clay at this stage of its deterioration, makes these promises to feed chum to a base that has been drilled by right-wing media to now care more about stopping migrants, even if they themselves live thousands of miles from the southern border, than about the economy or inflation or literally anything else, according to Gallup. We are literally becoming hungry. And to continue to entertain his superfans and keep their blood pressure sufficiently high that they'll run to the polls on the single day of voting that he has decreed in November, Trump has added to his previous Nazisms about vermin and poisoning the blood of the country the idea that black and brown migrants are not even people.
I would do the same thing if I had prisons that were teeming with MS-13 and all sorts of people that they've got to take care of for the next 50 years, right? Young people, they're in jail for years. If you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion. These are bad. These are animals.
And Republicans in Washington have literally nothing to say about all of this, other than to defend his violent rhetoric. Like Polly Pocket Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who not only set about legitimizing the authoritarian demagogue, also known as his boss, he repeated the language. So it's now down to Mike Pence, of all people, who Trump tried to get hanged by his paunch-bellied thug army on January 6, 2021, to have the guts to say that he won't support him. Pence, along with four dozen of Trump's former cabinet members, plus Liz Cheney and the Never Trump Republicans, are trying to tell you not to let this man anywhere near the Oval Office again. And they would know because they actually know him. And this madman, Donald Trump, seems to view threatening civil war as the backup plan to avoiding prison if he loses to Joe Biden again. Joining me now is Michael Fanone, former D.C. Metropolitan Police officer and author of Hold the Line, The Insurrection and One Cop's Battle for America's Soul, and Stuart Stevens, political strategist and senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Michael Fanone, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's talk about this, because there were a few things about this that literally infuriated me as I listened to Donald Trump in Ohio over the weekend. But one of the most galling was his promise to release into American civil society hundreds, and I guess at this point more than 1,000, incarcerated January 6th defendants. Let me play for you what you said about those people, and you confronted one of them who's now incarcerated for trying to assault you. This is how you testified before Congress.
On that day, I participated in the defense of the United States Capitol from an armed mob, of thousands determined to get inside. Because I was among the vastly outnumbered group of law enforcement officers protecting the Capitol and the people inside it, I was grabbed, beaten, tased, all while being called a traitor to my country. I was at risk of being stripped of and killed with my own firearm as I heard chants of kill him with his own gun. I could still hear those words in my head today.
One of the men who did that to you is named Daniel DJ Rodriguez. He's serving 12 years and 7 months behind bars. Trump says he's going to let him out. What do you make of his plan to do that?
It's outrageous. But again, I think we've all said the words outrageous, disgusting, disgraceful. so many times when it comes to Donald Trump and the things that he says and does. I just think it's important that we reiterate to Americans, potential Trump supporters, who these people are, who the individuals incarcerated for their crimes on January 6th are. These are individuals who violently attacked law enforcement officers at the Capitol. And if that's something you support, is the release of those individuals, I think you've got, you know, more issues than just supporting Donald Trump.
I mean, you serve as a law enforcement officer. You were doing your job when you showed up. It actually wasn't your job. You're a Metropolitan Police Officer. You weren't a Capitol Police Officer. You answered the call to come and help people, to try to chip in and help. When you hear Donald Trump, he's now changed the national anthem. He doesn't play the regular national anthem or get someone to sing the national anthem. He plays those people who are locked up for assaulting you and other officers. He plays that as the national anthem and then does this announcement about the wrongfully incarcerated hostages. He uses the term hostages. Just as a former law enforcement officer, how do you feel when you hear that?
I mean, it pisses me off. But I think we have to, you know, look beyond just Donald Trump and his rhetoric. He says these things because it resonates with his base. And who is his base? I think these are Americans who do not appreciate or understand democracy. They don't care about our constitutional republic. These are people who believe wholeheartedly that the ends justify the means. They want to win. They don't care about the diverse opinions of other Americans, their fellow countrymen. Their only concern is winning and forcing their view or their idea of what America is on the rest of us.
Yeah. Stuart Stevens, the other piece of this is that it is incredibly ironic that people who are claiming that millions of undocumented migrants are coming over the border specifically to commit crimes and murder people, when those people literally are desperate for work. And a lot of them are paying smugglers back, so they have to work, right? So they come in here and they look for jobs and they're doing all the construction work and all the agricultural work. They're now cheering the idea that actual criminals who are on tape and who were dumb enough to live stream their crimes, who were caught in some cases because their own family members turned them in, who beat and savaged police officers and were proud of it at the time while waving the Trump flag with the American flag. I guess they don't know which one is the actual national flag. Those people would then be released into the general population. I seem to recall that's what just happened in Haiti. The gangs in Haiti, the first thing they did before taking over that country was open the jails and release 3,500 of the hardest core members of their gangs, the most violent members of their gangs, and put them out into the street to terrorize people. Donald Trump is saying he's going to do that. And this is supported, I guess, by the Republican Party leadership.
Yeah, first, I've never had a chance to thank Michael. I just like to do it personally. That was extraordinarily courageous stand that you and your other officers took. And if you haven't read his book, it really is a hell of a book. And everybody should go out and read it.
It is.
I joined a party that said it believed in law and order. And that's just a farce now. You know, Michael's right. It's really not about Donald Trump. It's about the whole Republican Party and the people who are supporting Trump. And you can't say that these people don't have information. They don't have, or they have to listen to Fox, or they have to listen to some, you know, lunatic on OAN, or go down some rabbit hole on the internet. They have the same ability to discern, to make decisions. There's a lot more information out there now than there any time before in the history of the country. And yet, it's really about values. And this is why I call this book I wrote, It Was All a Lie. Because I don't know any other conclusion to come to that you say all these things that we said in the Republican Party, character counts, law and order, support the blue, all of these things, they were just marketing slogans. And when push comes to shove, most Republican leaders have just either supported it or quietly stepped aside, which is the same thing.
What do you think that they're getting? What does Mitch McConnell get out of endorsing this? What do any of these people get? Because Mike Pence, and he was the most sycophantic Trump supporter there was, even he says it's too much. What is Mitch McConnell? What do they think they're getting out of this?
You know, it's an extraordinarily important question. You know, one thing you can say about most politicians is they have really big egos, which doesn't really bother me, certain musicians, actors. And you would think that they would stop and look at how am I going to be remembered here in history? I mean, this is it. You can't say that Mitch McConnell's doing it so he can win his next primary. And yet he won't even see Donald Trump's name aloud. And let's don't forget, Mitch McConnell could have just brought an end to this. If he had supported convicting the president of impeachment, he would have been convicted. And then he went out and gave this speech. I think it's sort of a complete collapse of a party that has convinced itself that there is some other evil that is worth sacrificing their own values for. And they get together and they all, you know, mobs like comfort. And they tell themselves that this is what we have to do. And, you know, it takes some, I got to give Pence credit. I've never been a Mike Pence fan, but, you know, he's done the right thing here. And just not many other Republican leaders have.
Yeah. If Mike Pence is braver than you, then you're in trouble. Just as a former law enforcement professional, walk me through what happens when people who've been convicted of violent crimes, not just regular crimes, not just trespassing crimes, but the people who are actually in prison, these are the most violent of the insurrectionists. What does it look like when they're free as a bird and pardoned?
Well, first of all, I mean, it sends a message to anyone who has committed acts of violence on behalf of the former president that you will be supported and ultimately pardoned or released from prison. So it's carte blanche. If you want to go out and commit acts of violence, as long as you're doing it for Donald Trump, you've got no, at least no criminal culpability, no fears of prosecution. I mean, as a former law enforcement officer, someone who was there on January 6th, the message that it would send to me and to the police officers like myself that responded that day, our country has betrayed us, and that your sacrifices are not valued. And I, you know, it's not the first time that I've encountered those feelings as a cop, but having it sanctioned by the president of the United States to me is a bridge too far. Not something that I can live with.
Would you feel safe knowing that members of the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, and Boogaloo Boys, who, by the way, some of them, those members have been accused of directly shooting police officers, would you feel safe with those guys looking for migrants in a city you lived in?
Absolutely not. I mean, these are vigilantes. And I think it's important, too, that we go back and look at the makeup of many of these individuals. You know, these guys, like the guys that assaulted me, Daniel Rodriguez, Kyle Young, Albuquerque, Cosper Head. You know, these people had criminal histories before they went to the Capitol that day. They weren't law-abiding citizens. You know, many of these individuals had prior convictions for domestic violence abuse, assault, you know, drug trafficking, narcotics crimes, possession, all these different crimes. These were not upstanding law-abiding citizens to begin with. So the idea that you would have them playing a role as law enforcement officers in this country is outrageous.
And that is what one of the two major candidates for president is promising to do. Michael Fanone, and I thank you as well. I've thanked you before for what you did on that day, but I'll just thank you again because it is the right thing to do. And my friend Stuart Stevens, thank you both for being here. Up next on The Readout, surprise, surprise, fake billionaire Donald Trump has not been able to secure a bond to pay the $464 million judgment in a civil fraud case. Wonder how that happened. More on that next.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood
which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
I ran, and everybody knew I was a rich person. I built a great company.
And then they had, oh, but he'll never put in his financials, because maybe he's not as rich as people think. Not that it matters, but I'm much richer.
I don't need anybody's money. It's nice. I don't need anybody's money. Yeah. I'm using my own money. I'm not using the lobbyists. I'm not using donors. I don't care. I'm really rich.
The idea that Trump is a billionaire was the original big lie. In fact, it helped make him president. Well, surprise, surprise, it turns out he's not as rich as he claimed to be. Trump's lawyers informed the court today that he has not been able to secure a bond for the $464 million judgment against him and his co-defendants in the New York civil fraud trial. His lawyers now say that getting a bond in the full amount is a, quote, practical impossibility after reaching out to some 30 companies. They say that's because most companies will not accept his properties as collateral and instead are looking for cash to cover the bond. The clock is ticking for Trump with only 1 week left to post the bond, or New York Attorney General Letitia James can start seizing his assets, which she said she's ready to do. And this is the inherent problem with a man running for president who's increasingly desperate for money, because who knows what he might do to find it, from potentially looting the RNC, thanks to his newly installed loyalists, including his daughter-in-law, to getting help from some of his foreign dictator friends, to launching fresh rounds of disinformation to bamboozle his way back into the White House. Joining me now is Barbara McQuaid, former U.S. attorney, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, and author of the New York Times bestselling new book, Attack from Within, How Disinformation is Sabotaging America. First off, congratulations, Barb, on the new book. Very exciting and very important. Disinformation. And I wanted to go back to that first lie, because Donald Trump used the ruse of him being super wealthy to attract a lot of supporters. And the fact that he was famous also helped. That is now falling apart in the wake of him being called to the carpet to produce the cash. What do you make of the possibility that he might end up having to cough up some property?
Yeah, you know, he has always campaigned on this idea that I am not beholden to anybody. I don't need donors. I don't need money from anybody because I'm independently wealthy. I'm rich. He says it all the time. Well, it turns out he's not. And it turns out the only reason he was able to amass this fortune is because it was built on a foundation of lies. That's what was exposed in this case. And so now he owes more than $450 million. And Joy, the reason a bond is required when somebody wants to appeal is because that money is now due and owing to the taxpayers of the state of New York. And so if he wants to delay an appeal, that's fine, but he has to put the money up because it's designed to avoid someone filing a frivolous appeal just for the purpose of delaying the payout. Now, he says 30 lenders of bonds have said, we can't provide you with a bond. You're not a good credit risk. Well, that's the very reason that the state wants this bond. He's trying to offer a discount of putting up $100 million. And I think the court wisely says no, for the same reasons these surety bond companies say you're not a good risk. The court doesn't think he's a good risk either. And so I think this is a last-ditch effort to try to get some grace and some stay. But I think ultimately he's going to have to sell some properties. You know, imagine if you said, I know I owe you some money, but it's tied up in my car and my house and some other things, so I can't really pay it. You got to sell the stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think that if he doesn't, Letitia James can begin on March 25th to actually seize assets. And so if he wants to have his choice of what to sell, he needs to act before then.
But now, having purveyed being on The Apprentice and people perceiving him as a, you know, the people's billionaire, now he's been president. which has afforded him a lot of latitude in terms of avoiding all of these court cases, which is now down to 88 count criminal counts. But there's also this other thing that's happened is that he's created a cult of personality. So now people don't even believe that Joe Biden is president. The numbers are really actually frightening. 36% in a Washington Post poll don't believe that Joe Biden is even the president of the United States. And we're seeing this kind of disinformation really ratcheted up. It was ratcheted up in 2016. It's how he became president. The first time Russia got involved and did it. We're now seeing AI used. What is the risk of disinformation in the upcoming election?
Oh, I think it's enormous, Joy. I think, you know, we've seen these tactics of authoritarians for decades with, you know, repetition and conspiracy theories and big lies and other things. But Donald Trump has something at his disposal that Hitler and Mussolini didn't have, and that's social media, Truth Social, artificial intelligence. And so I think we are going to be bombarded with all kinds of false claims. You know, the normalizing of violence by talking about bloodbaths, revisionist history by talking about January 6th attackers as hostages. And I worry about even other things. You know, one of the strategies of the corrupt is not to exonerate themselves from their corruption, but to portray everyone else in the system as corrupt. And I fear that's what we're going to see is all kinds of smear campaigns against Joe Biden so that you can say, well, look, everybody's corrupt. So you might as well pick the one who shares your worldview, because if everybody's corrupt, then corruption doesn't matter.
Right. And that is literally what he got impeached for the first time, was trying to create a ruse that Biden was doing some corruption with Ukraine because he was doing funny stuff with Russia. Do you consider it part of the disinformation campaign for Trump to flip these ideas, to say that it's Biden who's the threat to democracy, to take the language of hostages, which we think about the Israeli hostages and other hostages being held by Hamas, but say, no, that's actually the people in prison? Do you consider that to be part of a disinformation campaign?
Absolutely, which is why I use the phrase disinformation and not lies, because disinformation isn't just false claims. It is manipulation. It's using information to mislead or manipulate the public. And sometimes it even is based on truth. But one of the things I think Donald Trump is doing is, you'll hear this from time to time, anything he's accused of, he accuses his opponent of. Because what he's trying to do is to neutralize that issue. You know, when he was caught with documents in his home, he said, Obama took documents. Well, you know, it's turns out Obama had the permission of the National Archives to store them at his presidential library. But you'll hear that all the time. And the effort, I think, is to take the sting out of the accusation so that people think that's not a big deal. Everybody does it.
I wish we had more time because I wanted to ask you about Manafort being back on the scene, but we'll just have to bring you back. But I will just congratulate you again on your best-selling book. Thank you so much for being here, Barbara McQuaid. Much appreciated. And up next, what do Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch have in common? You'll never guess which award they just were awarded. We'll be right back.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
On the MSNBC podcast, How to Win 2024, political experts former Senator Claire McCaskill and Democratic strategist Jennifer Palmieri examine the campaign strategies unfolding in this all-important election.
The focus is on the voters that are not necessarily in your corner now.
If Democrats are going to win in 2024, we have to be able to explain what is happening at the border and what the solutions are.
Search for How to Win 2024 wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Thursday.
Every year since 2020, the Dwight D. Opperman Foundation has honored a select number of women with the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Leadership Award. The late Supreme Court Justice, who was a liberal icon and trailblazer for women's rights, helped establish the award herself to recognize an extraordinary woman who has exercised a positive and notable influence on society and served as an exemplary role model in both principles and practice. But this year's slate of recipients is, let's just say, raising a lot of eyebrows, as some of them could not be further from those values. The five people chosen to receive this prestigious award include, I kid you not, Elon Musk, Rupert Murdoch, Michael Milken, Sylvester Stallone, and the sole woman, Martha Stewart. Perhaps it should come as no surprise that the foundation's chair, Julie Opperman, is a major Republican donor. As Mother Jones points out, since 2016, she has given thousands of dollars to Donald Trump, as well as other Republican campaigns and super PACs. Nonetheless, these choices have sparked outrage among Justice Ginsburg's former colleagues and her family members, who've released a statement calling the selection an affront to the memory of our mother and grandmother, saying the foundation has strayed far from the original mission of the award and from what Justice Ginsburg stood for. The family also demanded that Justice Ginsburg's name be taken off the award. That backlash caused the award organizers to announce just hours ago that they are canceling the gala set for next month to honor the recipients. Joining me now is David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones and MSNBC political analyst, and my friend David, WTH.
You know, they made this announcement last Wednesday. I saw it on Twitter. I tweeted about it. It just seemed
odd.
Absurd.
Yeah.
Absurd.
First of all, four men and only so one woman. So that sounds like some anti-DEI. We don't want to let the women have the women's award. We got to let men have it.
It used to be a women's award. And then they decided this year we're going to open up to men.
Yeah.
And rather than bringing men one at a time.
Yeah, awful.
They flooded the zone yeah. with four women. But then
the men are repressed.
Yes. But then the fact that they cited Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch was just unfathomable.
And Michael Milken, who didn't he get convicted?
Well, he was a junk bond trader
yeah.
who was convicted of Wall Street insider trading,
yeah.
went to jail for a couple of years, came out, and has been a philanthropist ever since. Mm. He's been able to hang on to his money.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
We kind of like Martha Stewart. She loves Snoop Dogg.
That's neither here nor there. But these two in particular.
Yeah.
And on my colleague, Ali Brilon, as we were trying to figure this out, Google, went to the FEC filings and found out that the chairwoman of the foundation had given all this money to Trump and to House Republicans, to $200,000 in 2020 to the House Republicans. And that sort of started making it seem like this is now making a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
I reached out to the family and they put out a statement, as you saw, and the foundation went dark. For several days, and the response on social media was exactly what you would expect. But I just, I want to read something because they went to all the honorees.
Yeah.
And they asked them for a statement for the press release announcing the award. And Rupert Murdoch says that this award that he's receiving represents a commitment to civil discourse.
Come on.
So this foundation is allowing Rupert Murdoch a platform to embrace Justice Ginsburg and say that, like her, I am committed to civil discourse.
The guy who created Fox.
I can come up with 787 million reasons why that statement is phony baloney. And, Elon Musk, didn't give as flowery a statement.
Well,
but this is all about legitimizing these people. I mean, he was criticized roundly recently for amplifying anti-Semitic and racist posts on X or Twitter. And so here they are out there saying these are the people we want to praise who embody Ginsburg's own values.
You wrote a book about extremism. Isn't what we're seeing here in general, people like this on the right, trying to shuffle the deck to make racists, anti-Semites, people who have negative social impulses seem like the good guys and the victims?
Well, I'm not sure about the victims, but it's certainly trying to
make them the heroes.
Make them the heroes, and like the press release is all about. Well, in their fields, they are people of accomplishment. Well, excuse me. The whole Justice Ginsburg story is not about going to a corporate law firm and making a lot of money and being a titan in the field of corporate law.
Right.
It's about pursuing
or buying a car company and making people think you invented it.
Yeah, it's about pursuing a set of values and being committed to that for decades, often fighting uphill.
Yeah. Let's very quickly. Paul Manafort is back in the world and back on the Trump campaign. your thoughts as someone who covered his chicanery.
Well, he's not back on the campaign yet, but this is a big trial balloon.
Yeah.
That obviously Trump and Manafort are putting out that he's going to be brought back in. This guy, according to a 2020 Senate Intelligence Committee report that was bipartisan, was a grave counterintelligence threat because when he worked for the Trump campaign in 2016, he was working in league and in connection with a Russian intelligence officer.
Right.
I mean, this was, you know, we don't want to talk about collusion.
Yeah.
But this was an element of collusion.
Yeah. David Corn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, people on the right love to say that they don't see color. And they've used that platitudinous stance to target diversity and affirmative action. The great Nicole Hannah-Jones has a new piece out on how colorblindness actually was hijacked from the civil rights movement. She joins me next. Republicans love to talk about colorblindness, a tactic spawned by President Ronald Reagan to undermine racial justice. Fast forward a few decades, and you have another Ron, this time DeSantis, invoking MLK during his crusade to ban any teachings about race. It doesn't make sense until you remember this is the modern-day Republican Party, which uses colorblindness to justify ending everything from diversity, equity, and inclusion, aka DEI, to affirmative action, to even banning books. But my next guest says the tactic is really just a trap. Nicole Hannah-Jones writes in the New York Times that conservative groups have, quote, co-opted both the rhetoric of colorblindness and the legal legacy of black activism, not to advance racial progress, but to stall it, or worse, reverse it. Joining me now is Nicole Hannah-Jones, Pulitzer Prize-winning creator of the 1619 Project and a domestic correspondent at the New York Times Magazine. She's also the night chair in race and journalism at the great Howard University. Nicole, my friend, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So I thought we reached the nadir of it when Clarence Thomas declared that the Freedmen's Bureau was not for black people. It was for everyone, which is not true. But you write here that this idea of colorblindness has now spanned the spectrum from taking away small business grants to affirmative action to everything. Tell us your thesis.
Right. So my thesis is that we now realize that conservatives embarked on this decades-long campaign to overturn Roe, that they played the long game, they had a long legal strategy, but we've kind of missed that. They were also implementing a parallel strategy, which was to take the rhetoric of the civil rights movement, this idea of colorblindness, and use it to actually take back and force us back back to a pre-civil rights era. So they've also had this racial strategy to really delegitimize any efforts to try to bring about racial equality, particularly for black Americans.
And you write about the Bakke case. And this was the case where a white man who applied to all these medical schools, he didn't get in and he sued. He said it was race. And you said for centuries, men like Powell and Bakke benefited from a near 100% quota system, one that reserved nearly all the seats at nation's best funded public and private schools and most exclusive public and private colleges, all the homes in the best neighborhoods, all the top well-paying jobs in private companies and public agencies for white Americans. So if non-colorblindness and the affirmative inclusion of only white people is legal, how can it be that colorblindness is only illegal when it's applied to black folks?
All right. Well, this is the trick of it, right? So for the first 350 years of what would become the United States, we had explicit racist law against black Americans. And power was fine with that.
Right.
And then as soon as we get the 1960s, where suddenly race was being used not to benefit black Americans, but to try to just catch them up, to help them gain equality, all of a sudden you can't see race at all.
Right.
And that's how it works. It's this idea that now at the moment where race can be used to try to make up for this strict white quota system that white Americans benefited from, that we can't see color. And as you know, the favorite line from that one speech of Dr. Martin Luther King is that one day we'll be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. But they don't want to quote the Dr. King after that, who said a country that for 250 years did something special against the Negro must now do something special for the Negro. So it becomes really hard to argue against, because colorblindness actually did come from the rhetoric of progressives, of black activists, but it was aspirational. What it was saying is that one day, once we repair all the damage from a racial caste system, a color-conscious system, that we can become colorblind. But in order to do that, we have to, of course, pay to attention to race to eliminate all the ways that race has been used to hold black people back.
It's funny. I liken it to if I put a gun to your head and I say, build me a house, and you build me a beautiful house, and now I get the equity from the house. I get to pass it on to generations. And then I take the gun down and say, we're equal. And if then you try to get a house, I say, now you're discriminating against me. That's right. Literally what they're doing. Tell me what the end game in here is. You open with Howard University. Do they now want to delist HBCUs and say they cannot be historically black?
Well, I think this is what's shocking to everyone is that not only are they saying, well, white institutions can't do things to improve diversity, can't do anything special for black people, but now they're coming for black institutions. So what that creates is an America where black people would just be permanently in the underclass, where not only can we not get help from them in order to rise, but we aren't allowed to help ourselves. So that's not Plessy v. Ferguson, which was the ruling that ushered in racial apartheid in the United States. That's Dred Scott. That's saying that black Americans will be permanently second-class citizens. It's a very dangerous moment that we're in, but I think we have largely kind of failed to recognize that.
Is that when they'll be satisfied? When black folks are returned to permanent second-class citizenship, then they'll say, now it's fair. Now you can't get grants if you're a black-owned business because we're going to take away the 0.5% that this little black organization was giving you. You can't have any things to try to remedy health inequities. Can't do that. Everything must go to only white men and white people. Otherwise, it's not colorblind.
Well, the perversity of it is you have someone like John Roberts on the Supreme Court who will say that segregation, like actual segregation of black children, that's constitutional as long as we don't have a law requiring it. But if you actually try to implement a policy that will integrate that school, that is unconstitutional. That is what colorblindness has become. Of course, we can never go back to the Dred Scott era, but what happens is we try to move as closely back to that era as we can. Mm-hmm. And really, to maintain, as our country is becoming less and less white, the political, economic, and social power of a minority group of people, which is not white people, but white people who have those conservative viewpoints.
Under this theory, can there be an NAACP? Can there be historically black sororities and fraternities? Can they even exist at all? Or are they saying that black folks can't have anything?
Well, I think it's yet to be seen. We know that the Fearless Fund, which was an organization founded by black women to help black women get venture capital, the fact that less than 1% of venture capital goes to black women, that's not a problem.
Not a problem.
A small number of black women trying to help black women get venture capital, that's a problem. Howard Medical School has been targeted. So less than 6% of doctors are black. Most of those black people who become doctors come out of HBCUs. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we can't get into most medical schools, that's not a problem. But if a medical school founded literally to educate descendants of slavery, educates descendants of slavery, that's a problem. I don't think we know what the end game is, but we are in an unprecedented moment.
I'm waiting for them to declare the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments themselves to be unconstitutional, even though they're in the Constitution. What a world. And thank you for always alerting us to it. Nicole Hannah-Jones, thank you very much. Coming up, despite Putin's crackdown on dissent in Russia, thousands bravely lined up to protest at polling stations across the country. And that's next. Only a month after opposition leader Alexei Navalny died in prison, Vladimir Putin has pulled it off again, extending his rule for another 6 years. In a highly orchestrated election without any real opposition, Putin received more than 87% of the vote, according to Russia's election commission, more than 10 points higher than the last time he stood for election. In a victory press conference, he said the landslide result was an indication of his country's trust in him. And not anything to do with the voters in occupied Ukraine who were forced to vote at gunpoint under the watchful eye of heavily armed, masked soldiers. Wonder who they were forced to vote for. Despite the preordained sham election, the world witnessed stunning moments of protest, with ordinary citizens risking beatings and arrest to line up at appointed times in a show of force against Putin's autocratic rule. Meanwhile, another leader in another part of the world is bending toward autocracy, too. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was the target of a stinging rebuke by Senator Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish official in the United States history. The Israeli leader hit back on CNN.
I think what he said is totally inappropriate. It's inappropriate for to go to a sister democracy and try to replace the elected leadership there. That's something that Israel, the Israeli public, does on its own, and we're not a banana republic.
Note that he did not promise new elections. Netanyahu spoke with President Biden today. It was their first interaction in more than a month, which is their longest gap between calls since October 7th. Netanyahu, who leads Israel's most right-wing and conservative government in the country's history, has big plans to curb the judiciary there. Those plans include limiting the Supreme Court's ability to review parliamentary decisions and changing the way judges are appointed. This is our Democratic ally in the region. I mean, let's face it, Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin have something in common, an ongoing war stance that is deeply unpopular, along with criticism that they are prolonging their wars in order to stay in power. Netanyahu, like Putin, has mastered the art of staying in power while pushing the country further and further to the right. Even as fears of famine grow, and as he is accused of using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare in the occupied Gaza Strip, which, by the way, is a war crime. As war rages, as people starve and children die, and as the fate of Rafah still remains unclear, Netanyahu battles for his reputation, legacy, and power. It is an uncertain time for his reign. And as we've learned from Putin, that is where the world must worry the most. And that is tonight's readout.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.